That's
I feel like there's a joke somewhere as far as like with the explosive diarrhea, yes. sewage blockage.
Work on that.
Something. Yeah, there's something to workshop here.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bride.
And good morning, everybody. Happy Thursday. I'm Kristen. I'm scratching my eyes because my eyes are affected by the smoke, as my voice. You know what else is? They're scratching their head, the Sarah Rodriguez campaign.
Oh, God.
The numbers are horrible for her. Horrific.
It is. Yes, absolutely. So first, I mean, so the numbers came out.
Yep.
Numbers came out for finance reports. We're going to get into it, at least for this segment. Obviously, we'll get into it a lot more tomorrow with Joe Zepecki and Jake Curtis, who's filling in for Bill McCosian. But I not only, this is my hot take on this. Sarah Rodriguez is not only not going to win this primary, I don't think she has a future in politics in Wisconsin.
That's a big take.
Because the more we learn about this, as far as what she knew ahead of the announcement on this weekend, the announcement of $1 million ad buy, what that did to shape the race as far as Crowley getting out, and what the finances that Crowley had are as good as everyone else's in this race right now.
Yeah.
And maybe the polling numbers weren't there, but the fact that he then put his support behind her, with her knowing some of the bumps in the road that she had coming for her, it looks so underhanded and it looks so duplicitous that I don't know how in the future other people, like, this is going to be a mark on her forever if she ever chooses to run again. Like, but there's no way forward for her. You can't even win a state Senate race with $34,000 on hand.
I called her before several times on the two major stories. One was, you know, behind closed doors comment she made months ago. And then this blow up, this implosion of her campaign. I said she's not ready for prime time. I don't think she's a candidate that's qualified to hold the highest office in the state. And I know it's sort of ironic because she's been working supposedly with the governor, who's been, you know, a two-term governor. Most Democrats
well,
think he's
been successful. Once she wasn't there for two terms.
And I know,
two,
but she's been working with him.
Has she?
I hope so, because otherwise, what's the resume item then? You have nothing.
I mean, it's not that she has nothing. She has an executive background with the healthcare. She was an assembly rep for two terms, but like, it's not that much more robust than anyone else who's running. That's for sure.
There's no difference.
And, so and the fact
her cash on hand is ridiculous.
Yes, and the fact that I do not understand. I have no idea how they see a path forward last night. And she put out a video,
hostage video, my opinion.
And I don't. Apparently, one of the line items. Not apparently, one of the line items in her finance report is $42,000 on crisis management.
Yeah.
I would not say that she got her money's worth on that.
Not money well spent.
Because I would say this has not been handled in a way that she has come out stronger, let alone neutral.
How? I guess I'm not a Democrat, but like, how could she possibly fix this in this short amount of, less than 30 days till the primary? I don't think she can.
Maybe people smarter than me and more experienced than me in campaigns will have a strategy to give her. But at this point, I would say she needs to drop out and endorse someone else, even if I don't even know if her endorsement means much to another campaign. But I will say, regardless of what you think about her politics and regardless of what you think about her chances of winning a general election, Francesca Hong has run the best campaign by far of the candidates for Democrats. And that includes now her money.
She also has the most cash on hand.
Yeah.
That says something about a candidate.
As far as
whether you take her seriously or not, that's something.
Her choice to spend early, her choice to spend how she has spent as far as support that has happened, and at least just based on, like, and again, I'm in Milwaukee, but even my friends who live out of state said that I see a fair amount of Francesca Hong signs. So as far as smartest, most efficient, most effective campaign thus far, Francesca Hong, hands down.
I think I asked you this question earlier in the week when we started talking it over with Matt Smith. It was breaking news at the time. How does her, like, the pullback of her campaign, whatever it is, whether she's done...
Which candidate are we talking about?
Sarah Rodriguez. Okay. How does that impact the remaining candidate? Because that's all that really matters.
Well, I think it gives an... Let's say if she were to drop out. I think it gives an opening to Kelda, potentially, who... Honestly, also, most efficient campaign for Hong, as far as impact, I think that's true. But Kelda's been very smart with her money. as far as the amount that she's raised, the amount that she's spent. She now has the money to do a massive blitz in these last
She rivals Hong on how much money she has.
Yes, exactly. And I think Kelda probably, I mean, depending on how you want to measure experience, but she's been in government for a very long time. She has run her own business. She does have a lot of experience. She is very heavy on details when she talks about policy. Now, you may not agree on her policy, but she at least knows what she's talking about. I think Joel also knows what he's talking about. Obviously, his name recognition is less because he's never held elected office. He's been like mostly behind the scenes. I just don't know if there's, if you're going to, not that, and Joel is certainly more moderate than Kelda. So that's the thing. This is what it's so, I think, frustrating for people who are friends with slash supported David Crowley, is that in this implosion of Sarah Rodriguez's campaign, a natural fit for the moderate lane coming out of this would have been a David Crowley. Because he is more moderate and probably is closer to the center, like a Rodriguez is. But as of what's left, Kelda Mandela, and well, Mandela's trying to, I don't know. Mandela, I don't know where he stands as far as, is he progressive? Is he moderate? I don't know. But Kelda, I mean, Kelda's pretty progressive, but she has a lot of experience to back up and talk about how, where
she's
her
a legislator.
Policies are.
Her, yeah. Her opinions, her comments, her record is pretty clear for everyone to see. We've had people that we know very well have said it was Mandela Barnes a year ago, and it's still Mandela Barnes. What do you think of those people? No? Not.
I mean, and we can get into it tomorrow with Joe, because I know Joe's like name recognition. I just don't see any signs of momentum for Mandela Barnes. And I know this is a very unscientific poll, but our friend Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area, he did this experiment as far as ranked choice voting. Again, very unscientific. People who subscribe and vote in this are going to be a very specific profile. But it is a profile of people who are all absolutely going to vote in an August primary, right? And in this ranked choice voting experiment, you didn't even have to redistribute the votes because Francesca Hong won it with like 61% of first place or like first ranked candidates. But as you looked deeper into the analysis, as far as where like Mandela was on that, he was dead last. Granted, it was like kind of tied with Joel, but like a difference of like four votes. But he has done very little to gain new support than whatever's left over from his 2022 Senate campaign.
I think we both agree this could be a fascinating primary to see what it not only does for these candidates, but what it does for the future of Democrats in the state. It'll tell us something, where they're going, what the party stands for, everything from democratic socialism to whatever Joel Brennan stands for or Kelda Roy's. That's sort of the, that will be the game changer for where the path forward is.
Because we still have a debate.
Yes,
we still have
July
more forums 28th. Coming up because we're doing a data center forum through the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that Jesse O'Poyan and I are moderating. So there is more time. So still don't vote. I would say this. If you have not mailed in, if you have your ballot sitting on your kitchen table right now, I'd hold on to it until a little bit more is developed.
We rarely ever say that.
Because we also have not talked about the fact that Wisconsin Elections Commission recently made a decision that you cannot go back. If your candidate drops out, you cannot go back and re-vote. So if you have already mailed in your ballot, it's done.
Yeah.
So hold on to it for now.
Make an informed decision, but that might mean waiting a bit. All right, lots more to talk about. We'll do it with Kristen and Steve on Point Taken, 620 WTMJ. Steve and Kristen on this Thursday edition, smoky edition. I was telling Kristen during the break. So I took a shower this morning. Freshly clean clothes. Now, I smelled my shirt during the break. It smells like smoke.
It feels like when I leave like a French bar.
And right?
It's like, or Shakers.
Everyone's smoking.
And you're just like, next day after you leave Shakers or any other cigar bar that's been grandfathered in Wisconsin, and you smell your clothes, you're like, or like with me with my big poofy hair.
Yeah, just a magnet.
You smell it the next
smoke.
Day, you're like, I need a shower immediately.
So Kathy and I are sitting out on our patio. It's probably like, I'm thinking like 8 o'clock, 8:30, and we see this smoke. I go, someone having a, it's like the smoke cloud comes in and then it starts to smell like smoke and my eyes are scratchy. And I always know if I'm in a smoky situation, I'm a cigar smoker, but I know that if I smoke too much, my eyes get scratchy. I start to feel it in my voice. It feels rough. My nose is like bothering me now. This is, and I was just looking up something. The numbers are crazy on this. One of the local experts, Craig Czarnecki, DNR's air management program. He's been doing it for 7 years. Never seen numbers like this.
Well, I mean, because we've had this basically the last two or three years
but
where
not like
a Canadian
this.
Fire has affected our air quality. I don't remember it being this pungent.
No.
I've been literally walking outside and feeling like you're at a barbecue.
I came out and I took the Hone Bridge and driving from Oak Creek, Howell Avenue. I'm turning east on Layton and I see the sun obscured by this. Mm-hmm. It looked like a massive fog bank. It was just, you could barely just see the sun. And typically that's hitting me in the face in the mornings, which is what the weather we should be having because it's absolutely gorgeous out when it's not the smoke conditions. Minnesota, Canada, severe wildfires. And the scary comment that I heard on the morning show with Eric and Telly, in for Vince, was these fires may not be extinguished until the snow comes. That's scary. It's like,
oh my gosh.
So you're talking, I know they get snow in September up in Canada, but I mean, that's still a ways. It's July. We're in mid-July here. So you can imagine, obviously wind conditions can move it around, but I asked Eric when he finished his show, they're getting in Boston. And I don't know how many miles, what would it be? 1,200 miles from Boston to Milwaukee, something like that. That's a big region of the country. Yeah. And just the fact that everyone's talking about it. I came into the office, everyone was buzzing about it. I saw a message from our internal office people here at the Avenue that they're changing some of the things they do with airflow. Like, that's real. So I would say, you know, not that I'm an expert, but if you don't have to go outside, I would limit your physical exertion because it's not healthy.
Well, that's what sucks. We're not going, but there's an annual on my bride's side of the family. We have an annual cabin with all my cousins and aunts and uncles because my aunt and uncle in Minnesota have a cabin in Danbury, which northwest, and it's this weekend.
So you're
going? We were never going because the other complications. But talking on our family text, I don't know if they're going to cancel the whole thing or what, because like once you're up there, what's the point of going if you can't be outside?
Yeah, so unless the wind shifts in a big way or weather patterns obviously can impact that, it stretches in Wisconsin from Eau Claire to Sheboygan, La Crosse to Janesville. It's going to blanket the entire state of Wisconsin today. So there's nowhere to hide if you're in Wisconsin. Air quality ranges from unhealthy for sensitive groups, and if you have lung issues or asthma, not a day to be outside, or even just hazard for everybody else. So, you know, as much as we don't want to overplay it, like if I can feel it, I'm a guy that smokes cigars, it's something you should be thinking about. So be safe. That's my public service announcement.
Do you want to hear the best tweet I've read today that feels like encapsulates? It's like, I need a vacation. So this is from, I've never seen this account before. It just got served up to me. It's from at Jersey H0MO. No idea. But it says, breathe in hefty lungfuls of smoke as I get explosive diarrhea from salad. The sky turns apocalyptic orange while oil companies drill in protected lands. Screwworms are eating cattle alive. And the president just paid $6 million for sexual assault. And I'm also able to bet on all of it.
Yeah. That's good encapsulation. Credit the author?
It's Davey with a blue check mark, but the handle is at Jersey H0MO. 130,000 likes. I think he struck a chord.
Yeah, I think that hits all the major themes. We are the Point Taken Show. We are Steve and Chris, and we will be back after this on 620 WTMJ. Spinning through a Saturday, smoky Saturday, Thursday, smoky Thursday here in Wisconsin, and the entire state will be blanketed by this heavy layer of Minnesota and Canadian wildfire smoke. I guess I'm doing some writing this afternoon. I know you got some projects you're working on. I'm basically going to stay in because I can feel it in my head. And I've been feeling great lately, and the sunshine's been great, and I had fun outside the last week or so. But I don't think it's a day. I know people are playing golf today.
Really?
Yeah.
They shouldn't be.
I wouldn't, but I mean, golfers are
Mike
diehard.
Was supposed to go on a boat. That got canceled. I feel like it's...
Well, if you believe the text line, and I do in most cases, City of Milwaukee Department of Public Works has closed down because of air quality.
Yeah.
So it's a serious thing, and I don't want to make light of it, but I think you have to pay attention to it. All right, speaking of a serious thing, we have a newsletter that comes out every Sunday. I got a great interview with the very hunky, I was told, Sal Frelick. Hunky?
He is hunky.
Yeah.
He's a little short for me, but like still very hunky.
Is he short?
I think he's like 5'6 or 5'7.
Oh, wow. That would be tough for you. Although, open your horizons.
I'm married, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's true. But if you're not married, I don't know if he's not married.
I think he's got a serious girlfriend, though.
Oh, there we go. We're finding a lot about Sal Frelick. Well, I found a lot about him and his involvement in the community. So he joined me yesterday for an interview that I recorded, and it's available only to our subscribers on the Extra Points newsletter. It's a fun interview. We talked about both his community venture, which he'll reveal on the program, which I'll talk more about next week. But he sat down and talked about the team and the team teammates. It just was a great interview.
How hard was it to get that interview set up?
Not hard.
Really?
Because I had a connect.
You got pull?
Because of the group he's working with, which I'll talk about next week.
Okay.
And I've worked with that group previously. They connected us, which I'm very grateful for. He was so fun to talk to. And
that's
I've talked to him before on opening day. He's just a cool dude. He's a Boston area Massachusetts guy. He just was.
Is he your favorite brewer right now?
He might be.
Ooh.
Although I'm a big Miz fan.
Yeah.
The way I mean, how do you not like him?
What was he had like Pokemons in his card?
On his glove.
Was that on his glove?
So he had a mounted card on the back of his glove.
Or what was it his dog that he got like embroidered into his suit jacket?
He's just a fun dude. How do you not like him?
My favorite thing about Miz was when we did the Penalysis Live and Murph was getting interviewed and he revealed that they call Miz Nine. He calls him Nine because he has the emotional maturity.
Which doesn't surprise me, which is probably why he's so
really
lovable.
Young.
Yeah. And he's a kid, really. I mean, you think about the average age of players.
A kid who can throw a ball very, very, very fast.
Whenever you hear, I think I blew this out the other day. Whenever you hear a stat, like there's 231 pitches over like 102 miles an hour, and he's thrown all of them. And there's a lot of great players in Major League Baseball, Hall of Famers, future Hall of Famers. He's just a great story. So if you want to hear that interview, just subscribe right now. Text the word extra, E-X-T-R-A, to 855-616-1620. And then Sunday morning, we'll blast it out. It should be front and center on the homepage of our newsletter. You
we
can
put
see
it first. It.
Let's put it first.
We'll put it first.
Yeah. And we have to find a hunky picture of them, too. So let's get
that
working
won't be
on.
Hard.
No, probably not. And the women that they have their thing and guys just baseball fans. It's something for everybody, which is what the newsletter is all about. So definitely subscribe. We do a lot of fun things in the newsletter, some great writing and some great recommendations for things, including mine. Wisconsin Recommendation is a great new book on, guess what the subject is? Sausage.
What?
Yeah, sausage. New book on bratwurst.
You're doing your recommendation this week is a book on sausage.
It's a recommendation of an article about that in the Journal Sentinel about a book on sausage.
But you have not read the book yet.
I haven't read the book, but I read the article. And you know the authors, so you'll respect that. Well-timed coughing on the program. It's affecting everybody.
I already had a cough. This is only making it worse.
If Neil Doyle, our America's favorite newsman, coughs up a lung during his newscast, we'll know it's getting serious.
It's time for some forward thinking on Point Taken. Brought to you by City Forward Collective, focusing on education in Milwaukee.
And joining us, as always, he is the executive director of City Forward Collective, Cluston Morgan. Welcome back. You've been on the road for a while.
Yeah, I took a little bit of time away with the family. Tried to be a little bit like you, Steve. Got some traveling.
Hey!
And we're going to talk about Hawaii off air because I'm going to be going there in November. So
awesome.
It's 1 month, less than 1 month, until the primary. Your organization has talked to all of these candidates, I believe all the candidates, looking at where they stand on issues that actually would impact Milwaukee's classrooms. So the facts of this, I think, is important for voters. So give me a broad overview of those conversations, what they were telling you.
Yeah, so I was a teacher, but I was a civics teacher in particular. So let me just start there, right? I know there's lots of back and forth about the sort of who's leading in the polls and, you know, what happened. It's campaign finance report day. I'm looking too. I get it. But we think it's important to take a look at the issues, right, and where these candidates stand on the issues. One of them is going to be our next governor. That governor is going to have some incredibly important decisions to make across a whole host of issues, including in K-12 education. And so one of the things that we try to do at City Forward Collective is lay out, both for the governor's candidates and for the other elections on the ballot, we can circle back around to that too, where these candidates stand, right? Some of them have a record. Many of them have had conversations. This has been kind of a harder one to track because a lot of them have been sort of small forums and things that maybe don't make the top of the news. But we've had conversations with each of the campaigns, at least to some level. And with most of them, we've engaged, sort of been the back and forth to understand where your positions are on some of these policy priorities that, you know, we believe, you know, we've laid out our priorities around accountability, around funding, around the need to improve outcomes for students in Milwaukee, and around the reality that in Milwaukee, about half of our kids are in a school of choice and half our kids are in the district, and we got to have solutions that work for all of them.
So you have these six candidates, one Republican, five Democrats right now.
Is that the count today?
Yeah, that's the official count.
As of today, that is the count. Moved.
But as we've learned, it's fluid, and certainly breaking news can impact that. So what are the questions, policy questions, you're most concerned? From your organization's perspective, City Forward Collective, what are you most concerned about the policy of these candidates?
Look, we've got 109 or so thousand students in Milwaukee. And I think first and foremost is, what do we do to ensure that every one of them is reading, writing, doing math on grade level, getting the education they deserve? We think that means fair and equal funding for every kid, no matter the type of school that they attend. We think that means, you know, an acknowledgement that the parental choice program vouchers, right? This is a thing that in Milwaukee has existed for 30 or 35 years. I know there's lots of national narrative around this. I know there's lots of local tension around this, but the fact of the matter is this is a program that serves more than 30,000 students in Milwaukee. The idea that we're going to phase that out or eliminate it or send 30,000 students back into Milwaukee public schools, they don't have the capacity to take that on right now. We also have, you know, 15,000 students in public charter schools. They need additional resources and support. And we've got, you know, just over 55, 56,000 students that are served by Milwaukee public schools. And there are some real challenges there as well.
So is that the main question you're asking when you sit down with candidates as far as what their feelings are on the voucher and the, like, parental choice? Or because when you've come on the show, we've talked about a variety of different things, from changing districting to changing how the school funding works. But is that for you guys the main thing that you're looking at?
I would say it's a starting point, right? You know, do you have a plan for all of Milwaukee's kids and all of the challenges that they are facing? You know, is it, you know, reading and literacy? We know we've got real challenges there, worse than the nation outcomes. But these funding issues are real, and they're real across the board, right? You know, we talk about charter and choice, absolutely. We're not shy about that. That's half the kids in the city. We also talk about the need for making sure that students in Milwaukee public schools, maybe those who have special education needs, have the funding that they need. So, yeah, absolutely.
Let's give voters real information. Republican candidate, he supports expansion of these programs.
Yes.
Tom Tiffany.
Yeah. His position is pretty clear on this. You know, he's been a supporter of school choice for quite some time.
Speaking of that, because Milwaukee is different than the rest of the state as far as density.
Yeah.
What would that feasibly look like to expand it as far as, like, splitting? We're already having less and less kids. So having more schools and splitting schools to have smaller populations, like, does this model work throughout the entire state?
You know, it's a good and a fair question. And I think it gets to, like, one of the conversations that has come up in a lot of our conversations with these candidates, not just Tom Tiffany on both sides, is the realities of the choice program in Milwaukee, longer duration, much more heavily used here in Milwaukee than elsewhere in the state. The realities of what that looks like relative to the district are also different here than other places in the state. And actually, the funding model is different. Unlike most of the other, you know, places in the state here in Milwaukee, student, you know, funding for the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program doesn't offset against MPS's funding resources. That's all of these matter. All of these are sort of nuances that get into the policy weeds a little bit, but they are real and relevant issues in the conversation. You know, the reality is I don't think the political, you know, sort of writ large, right? We're talking about the governor's candidates and they matter. You know, we should talk about the legislature in combination with them, right? Because like the combination sort of like what's going to be possible. I think the reality is sort of the question is, do we sort of keep what we have, figure out how to make it work better? You know, everyone has had a conversation about accountability and the need for additional accountability. Another issue we spent some time talking about. But is accountability about making sure that student outcomes are better, or is accountability about winding down the program?
All right, let's take a break quickly, and we'll come back, and then we'll talk through the Democratic candidates and what their stances are when it comes to Milwaukee schools and parental choice. He is Cleston Morgan, Executive Director of City Forward Collective, and this is Point Taken.
Cleston Morgan is our guest. He's the Executive Director of City Forward Collective, joins us a couple times a month talking about educational issues. So let's quickly touch on where the five Democrats stand on what we just talked about, and then we'll shift gears to a couple other topics.
Sure, we were talking about private schools, so let's start there. And you know, I think we would say, you know, there are, you know, a couple of candidates, Joel Brennan, Sarah Rodriguez, who have talked about reforms, you know, additional accountability, different limits on the program, but haven't proposed any type of elimination or wind down. And then the other three candidates, Mandela Barnes, Francesca Hong, and Kelda Royce, who have each said that they would in some way, shape, or form either eliminate or wind down or responsibly sunset, I think is language that one of them used, the private school choice program.
What are the current limitations when it comes to the private school program versus what some of the limitations that are proposed or debated?
Yeah, so right now there's an income eligibility threshold. Families have to be below 300%, I believe it is in Milwaukee, 220% in the rest of the state to be eligible for a voucher. There are additional, you know, residency requirements that determine which program you're in. There are some pretty stringent financial accountability requirements, and actually the legislative auditor did some work last year and saw that, you know, actually these schools get audited with more frequency and more rigor sometimes than our districts do. What hasn't been there, at, you know, to this point in time, is accountability for academic outcomes. And that's something where I think there, you know, I think there's, you know, we've been on record. We think that's a good conversation for us to be having and a necessary one, as long as we're holding all of our schools to the same standard. And I do think that's one where you're seeing some, you know, so many of the candidates engage.
Is the public charter debates fall in line similar with the candidates?
Yes, with one important distinction. No one is proposing to eliminate public charter schools. There seems to be pretty broader support for public charter schools, but okay. We do see differences in, you know, sort of the current landscape allows universities, the city of Milwaukee, there are multiple authorizers. There are some who'd like only school districts to be authorizers, you know, and then, you know, some of the candidates, again, roughly along the same lines as before, who would like to just keep the current status quo.
All right. So people are, it's surprising to me. I think, I mean, obviously, Kelda Royce is endorsed by WEAC,
yes,
which is a big endorsement for her to get. And I think, and granted, from Republican standpoint, there isn't, I mean, I guess Andy Manske is running. Did he not fill this out?
But sorry, we did not get to him.
But I as far as, yeah. You know, Tom Tiffany hasn't been pressed on this more because he hasn't had to, because he doesn't have a primary opponent. But for such an important issue, right? We talk about schools a lot, even when you're not here, as far as where we are with reading and math scores, where we are with funding and referendums. Like, it touches so many people's pocketbooks and the future of the state. It hasn't felt like it's gotten as much attention as far as how people are deciding who they're going to vote for. Is that a bad take, or is that the same feeling that you have?
I think it's exactly the right take, and that's why we think it's so important to try to do this work to lay out the issues where we see them. And I would extend this, again, beyond the governor's race. There are important state legislative races, too. We don't have to look that far into the past to see, you know, where differences between the governor and legislature can be decisive on important issues in education as well. We all care about our kids, right? Like, there's no anti-kid candidate in this race. But, you know, I think they are laying out very different visions for how we're going to educate our kids and prepare them for the future. And, you know, we've shared polling here and in other places. This is a real fear, and it's a fear that unites our state. 93% of families are concerned about, you know, their kids being prepared for the future when we pulled this back in May. 92% are concerned about academic performance outcomes. You know, this isn't a Democratic issue. It's not a Republican issue. It really has been surprising. You know, I get it. There's so many candidates. Like, a lot of these are like raise your, you know, thumb up, thumb down type things. Like, it's just not the right form to have the level of complexity that we need to have in this conversation. But I think it is really important as we get into the home stretch that we actually, you know, hone in on and pick a candidate that's going to, you know, deliver the education that our kids deserve.
Kristen mentioned funding, which is something we've talked about extensively on this program with you and with other guests. Are the candidates, other than the we need to give more money to public schools, is there any depth of that conversation beyond that? That's an easy one to make.
I would say this has been one of the more frustrating parts of this conversation. You know, I still don't have an answer for what does fully fund mean. Right. And either like what is the right dollar amount or how do we get to that dollar amount? And that's not a one side or the other side issue. Like, that's a very important question for us to ask. You know, I think Charles Franklin, I think I saw earlier this week, was saying like the most interesting question in that Marquette Law poll is the tension between property taxes and additional funding for schools. Like, how we do this really matters. We've been super clear. We think the funding system is broken for districts. We think the funding inequities between Milwaukee's districts and public charter and private schools are unfair and inequitable. I've actually spent some time this summer getting around the rest of the state, and you know, you go like district to district, and some of those disparities are every bit as bad as the disparities that we see here in Milwaukee. It's a real challenge, and it's been, you know, it's been disappointing to not get more substance beyond sort of the talking point fully fund.
Well, and does that feel like it directly maps to affluent areas and non-affluent areas when you're going all over the state?
No, it
oh,
doesn't.
Really?
It's actually somewhat surprising in that regard. Like, the property tax outrage, I think, is everywhere, right? You know, we felt it a couple years ago here in Milwaukee when we had our 30% tax increase for MPS. Madison is going through this right now, and they're having similar versions of this. It's not that people don't want schools to have the resources that they need, right? Like, we all believe in our kids. We're willing to make investments, but it's sort of a question of how much is enough and, you know, how much pain can we take, because the downstream consequences of this in terms of affordability, in terms of housing affordability, like, they are real, and like, there are trade-offs here.
We got about a minute left, but I want to get this in because we're talking about elections and candidates. What are the questions that parents and listeners should be asking of the candidates?
Well, I think first and foremost, like, ask the questions, right? Get under the hood. Don't just listen to the headlines or the talking points or, you know, whatever the label is behind them. You know, the old civics teacher in me, you know, says, got to do your homework, right? And it's a little bit harder this time. We've tried to make it a bit easier. We've got some resources on our website, cityfordcollective.org, to help people understand where these candidates are positioned. But that would be my first assignment. You know, do your homework, make an informed choice, and don't give up your vote, right? You know, these elections, you know, August 11th primary elections are incredibly important. If you're an early voter, you know, my ballot's in on my countertop already. You know, make sure you get the ballot in honor before the 11th.
All right, a couple great resources. Cityforwardcollective.org, and you have a Substack. So it's CFC, City Forward Collective, mke.substack.com. More in-depth writing
Absolutely.
And reporting on this.
Follow us on Substack as well.
Executive Director of City Forward Collective, Cleston Morgan. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Sounds good.
Awesome. Quick break. Obviously, elections are on our minds. Less than 30 days to the primary. We'll have an in-depth conversation with Joseph Pecky, Democratic strategist, and Jake Curtis, who's filling in for Bill McCosh-Mara. So much to talk about nationally, statewide. We have obviously the Sarah Rodriguez meltdown.
We'll know whatever Trump has to say as of
Address
tonight.
To the nation.
Probably will be where we start.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much going on. And real quickly, I'm going to tease something that's not even going to be published for 2 weeks. I had a great conversation with a Catholic priest this morning.
It like changed your entire demeanor this morning.
Oh my God, because one of the questions we talked about is the negativity that's out there. It's looming. And Father Tim Kitsky, a Catholic priest, serves four parishes. He goes, I can't live in that world. I have to talk about positive things. Yeah. And that's the message. And he changed my day.
You came out just like skipping.
Man.
Metaphorically, but basically.
Yeah, we're going to publish that conversation in about 2 weeks from yesterday as part of my Faith in Politics. We talk about that, but a lot of things. It was a brilliant conversation. He's a brilliant faith leader, and it's one of the reasons I want to do this. And we're going to bring some of these leaders on the show, and I'm also going to put together a two-hour special based on all these conversations that we're going to package for a weekend broadcast on WTMJ. It's so good. There's a reason why these people are leaders. Their messaging is awesome. Father Tim, 37 years as a priest.
Well, it's what my neighbors who were good friends with, big Catholics, go to church every week. They had told me about a priest before. They're like, so because he travels to different churches, and whichever mass he's doing has the biggest attendance that weekend. And so I texted them after you gave me his name this morning. I was like, is this the priest you told me about? They're like, sure is.
He's a rock star.
Rock star.
Brilliant. And he was dropping more historical quotes and famous things that famous people have said. And I'm a fan of history. It was unbelievable. I mean, what he was dropping in what was probably a 30-minute conversation. So look forward to that on Squidiology coming up. We always do an hour of local news. That's coming up next. Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com. She's Chris, and I'm Steve. Point taken. News is next.
11 o'clock on a Thursday means it's time for a full hour of City Stories with Urban Milwaukee President Jeremy Janine on Point Taken. Everybody wants to
be close. All right, so you gave us a air wellness check as you walked in, Jeremy, and said that this studio is much worse than the hallway outside of the studio, which is maybe why I've been coughing all morning.
Not just hot air, but bad air.
Yeah.
I was going to make it seemed in poor taste, but I'll now say it on the air to everyone listening. I was going to text you both this morning because as I was walking to my office, I looked down Wisconsin Avenue and the calling was essentially gone. So I said, Steve has succeeded finally. but unfortunately, it's gone for all the wrong reasons. Yeah. I couldn't see it because of the smoke.
Not to belabor the point, it's absolutely mind-boggling how much it affects just what you see, but the way we feel and throats and eyes. And so, like, by all means, if you don't have to be out, don't be out.
Yes, and if you got an air filter at your house, use it.
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. And while it was sunny yesterday, we don't often start with ribbon cuttings or new things, but this was a great story because as somebody who, whenever I eat downtown in this area, part of town, you know, our evening almost always ends with a walk along the river. It's just a great way, especially in the summer. It's just perfect. And we're expanding all of that stuff in Milwaukee.
We are. Jaslyn was, before I came on air, talking to me about how she had recently encountered it. But we're talking at the eastern end of Greenfield Avenue. So if you're going to the Inner Harbor, there's Harborview Plaza is down there. The new Komatsu South Harbor Campus factory facility is down there with a massive shovel and dump truck. So probably the biggest you've ever seen there. Worth the trip just for that. But now you have an extra reason to go, which is 4,300 feet of Riverwalk are opening up. The first half of that opened yesterday officially. There was a ribbon cutting. Then there's train tracks that divide it from the southern half, which you'll be able to access from Kinnickinnick Avenue near the northern tip of Bayview. The big challenge will remain, can the city work something out with Union Pacific? So this 4,300 square feet, you can actually use it as transportation. Right now, it's a wonderful new public asset. I intend to take my daughter down there to go biking because it's the flattest, smoothest pavement you've ever seen.
Yeah.
brand new. The one thing Jaslyn and I were talking, there's not a lot of amenities yet because we're at phase one right now. The city received an almost $15 million grant to pay for, quote, transportation. So you have a 15-foot wide river walk there, much wider than what you'd see downtown. You have some benches, but then come phase two, which should start construction later this year or next year, you'll have amenities, possibly like bathrooms, all kinds of other great stuff, a feature that's going to allow you to essentially touch, literally touch the water. There's a new bridge coming. So it's an attractive space.
That's very cool. And so with that, because full disclosure, I'm friends with Tia Torhorst, who's the CEO of the Harbor District. And so talking about like the bathroom situation, because what is kind of the politics around public bathrooms in the city of Milwaukee?
As a national issue, public bathrooms have just been expensive.
Yeah.
We look at Val Phillips Plaza just outside of the studio. There's bathrooms built into the side of the building that's now Drafton. What is it called? Drafton Vessel, the burger place there. I don't know how often those bathrooms are used yet. They're deliberately externally facing with the idea that they could be closed when there's not events. But maybe if the park's programmed more often or if the tenant's cleaning them, I expect to see the same thing down at Harborview Plaza eventually. Where maybe the bathrooms aren't open around the clock, but whenever there's events, instead of dragging in porta potties, you just unlock the door.
Actual bathrooms.
Here's why this matters. And as somebody who lives in the suburbs but works downtown and comes here to eat dinner at lovely restaurants and drink at some of the great establishments we have here, we've brought couples from other places around this area. Now, they don't live, they rarely come to Milwaukee. They just, it's a Brewers game or Bucks game situation. And when you take them out to dinner and we go to dinner and we walk, they're like, wow, this is awesome. So, it changes the mindsets in a real significant way of people who are like, I'm not going there. They see it and they go, wow, this is, I never thought this looked like this. And you start walking along the river. Yeah, the river has its negatives too, but it is an amazing walk as you go. And I'm talking mainly Michigan South. That's sort of a little bit north. We go up to see the Fonzie statue on occasion. But it's just an awesome way to rediscover a city that, by the way, is still the biggest city in the state. So I am an advocate for this stuff, and I know it costs money. But again, these partnerships matter. You can help your local business, bars and restaurants, shops, whatever. But you also can introduce people, reintroduce people to the city of Milwaukee, which is, this is great, great PR.
I guess that is kind of the question as far as driving people, like the messaging campaign around, hey, here's this new resource and like that you can go enjoy the city, and having that be top of mind for people as they're figuring out what to do in an afternoon.
I think messaging all these amenities Milwaukee has always been an issue.
Yeah.
Visit Milwaukee's really improved its game recently, but they're not out there promoting like individual Riverwalk segments. Yeah. You mentioned your friends with Tia. I think the Harbor District Inc. is doing a good job of increasingly promoting this vision of a cohesive district. One thing that's never made sense to me is people take trips to Duluth and Superior to watch the ships come in.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of those ships come into Milwaukee's port too. This is, in as the press conference showed yesterday, there was a ship unloading behind us. This is going to be a great spot if you just want to see something different. Go there.
Between that and the construction equipment that's there, it's a good site for little boys or little girls.
Yeah. I got to ask you a question before we go to break. I know we're late. I know Jazz is giving me the look. But did I see a big ship at the what will be the new cruise ship dock this week? Was there something going on there?
So the cruise ships can dock there already. There's just not what I'll call the amenities, but really we're talking about sewer and gas lines.
That's already started.
Yeah, they've always been able to dock there. It's just amenity free. Now it'll be amenity rich once it opens.
I thought I saw that yesterday. Lots more to talk about. Jeremy Jean, urbanmilwaukee.com. Where's the tchotchke shop?
755 North Milwaukee Street or online at urbanmilwaukeethestore.com.
All right, lots more to come after this.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bryce. He is Steve Scafidi, and it's Thursday after 11, so we're talking to Jeremy Janine about all things Milwaukee. All right, so I think was it last week or 2 weeks ago that we started reporting on the fact that there's been an increased uptick in ICE arrests in Milwaukee, and then there was questions about what is the enforcement on certain things that the Milwaukee Common Council has passed, especially when it comes to masked agents. And so now the DOJ has weighed in. So yes. What are they saying?
The U.S. DOJ via essentially the person acting in charge, Brad Schimmel, who has a more complicated title than that, but he is essentially leading the Eastern District of Wisconsin, has sent an angry letter to the city of Milwaukee. Such a law cannot stand. The city of Milwaukee, previously when it passed this mask ban for law enforcement officers, which has exceptions, but across the board, it admitted the city's attorneys said, you're going to have an uphill time enforcing this on federal agents, that it is legal to pass this, but they can be wave their federal supremacy flag and say, this technically doesn't apply to us. We saw that same thing play out with zoning, that like the state, if it wants to build a new college, can do its supremacy. But the federal government has a way out of this. The DOJ doesn't seem to believe that the law should even be on the books, even though they can just say it doesn't apply to them. The letter from Schimmel says, this potentially exposes federal officers to enforcement against them and the performance of their federal duties, chilling their ability to perform those duties, and it raises the specter of a confrontation between local and federal law enforcement. Now, the interesting thing is there's been no evidence that anyone's tried to enforce this on them.
Mm-hmm.
There's been no legal challenge in court for the city's specific ordinance, and the federal government can just say, we're not going to follow this. But instead, they're taking this very confrontational stand and threatening legal action against the city. City Attorney Evan Goyke declined to comment, but Alderman Alex Brower, the lead sponsor, gave me quite a earful about it. He was very active in saying that we've done everything by the law, that these people should comply with the law, and it's in the best interest of all Milwaukee residents that anyone making arrests is unmasked.
To his comments, federal law supersedes, correct? In this case?
There is a California lawsuit that does exist. The nuance of the California thing is California passed a law that specifically applied to federal agents. The city believes its defense is different because the city's ordinance applies to all law enforcement officers, regardless of if they're federal, state, local.
Okay, so this is just an angry letter.
This is an angry letter.
What does this actually result in?
We could see the Trump administration take the city of Milwaukee to court. This is kind of a shot over the bow to see what happens.
And would that be in federal court or state court?
Well, that's a good question. I think they would have some discretion there, actually.
Okay.
There will be lawyers.
There will be lawyers.
Yeah. Which means more money, which, again, we spend one of the outcomes of all of this endless debate over these things is countless dollars, our dollars, being spent on courtrooms, lawyers, and cases. All right. Democratic Party, we spent some time talking about the sort of disarray, confusion among some of the candidates, one candidate in particular at the state level for the nomination for governor, but Milwaukee's Democratic Party.
Things are a bit in upheaval locally.
Describe what that means.
Yeah, so there is on the south side of Milwaukee, Sylvia Ortiz-Velez, incumbent state representative, essentially does not play nice with other Democrats. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that, of which you should look up the past reporting, but there's... The establishment Democrats have come after her. She's responded. There's been even an investigation by DA Kent Laverne. She's no longer caucusing with the Democrats, although she runs as a Democrat. So what the Milwaukee County Democratic Party does, and that's the important nuance, Milwaukee County Democratic Party, is they recently endorsed her challenger, political newcomer Ismael Luna. And it turns out that there are bylaws that say, you know, you're not endorsing a challenger to an incumbent that is a Democrat. Well, they went and bypassed that, did that. And as a result, over some behind-the-scenes politics, the majority of the executive board, the Milwaukee County Democratic Party, has resigned over this endorsement, led by Brett Timmerman.
So Brett, and he only won this last December, right?
Yeah, this new slate of people all came in, and they ran as kind of a collective ticket, and now they've resigned as a collective ticket.
And Brett has as well?
Yeah, Brett was the leader of that. He became the chair of the
party. Who made the decision to endorse that now there's a protest of all the leadership?
Talking with sources, it seems like something that the Assembly Democrats worked with the local Milwaukee County Democratic Party to make this endorsement. And then there was
And they left the leadership team out of it?
No, the leadership team was very much involved. And then the leadership team seemed to have been brought to their attention that they violated the group's own ordinance or bylaws.
Oh, so they resigned because they broke their own ordinance?
Correct.
Got it.
Going back to Ortiz, clearly she doesn't buy into the Rodney King philosophy that we just all kind of get along.
Yeah,
but she seems to be difficult in every situation she's involved in. Am I overstating it?
I can't speak to every situation, but lots of situations with her Democratic colleagues seem to end up in confrontation.
I mean, there's a reason why sometimes you point the finger back at you.
Again, discussion with sources, there's some things she's plenty justified in as well.
And I'm not saying that she's not, but it's like there's a lot of drama there. And I'm not a fan of drama in politics. I think it's overdone and wastes our time. So that would be my commentary on her. Let's take a break. Lots more to talk about. A site that there's no interest in developing this site. Apparently there's something there, but we're not getting there. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. A tease.
Right. Jeremy Jean, UrbanWalkie.com. Next. I almost said bad word on the radio. I'm glad I didn't hit my on button there. Woo! Jeremy Jean in studio. What you got for us?
I've got a Mark Twain adage. Buy land. They're not making any more of it.
Well, hey, nice adage.
I think it might actually be wrong in this specific case. In 2009, there was this grand bargain between Milwaukee World Festival, which operates Summerfest, and the city of Milwaukee. Milwaukee World Festival wanted a 10-year lease extension. Again, we're in 2009. That takes them through 2030. That gave them the assurances to reinvest in what then was the Marcus Amphitheater. We now know it as American Family Amphitheater. The BMO Pavilion was just a temporary stage at that point. They built it. So they did this whole South Campus renovation in exchange for this lease with the city. The city got out of the deal, this public safety payment for the first time. Now we know, flash forward 10 years from that 2009 date, that public safety payment was woefully inadequate. They were getting like $150,000 a year, and it was costing $800,000.
Right.
But the press releases didn't mention this. None of the news coverage mentioned it of the day. But the city negotiated for about a two-acre site at the southern end of East Erie Street that it could just remove it from the lease at any point. It's a parking lot right now for for Summerfest. Rarely used because it's only if the lots are completely full.
Yeah. Overflow, right?
Yeah. Essentially overflow parking. So like Festa Italiana is probably not filling up this parking lot. Summerfest is on its nine nights. Pride Fest, again, probably not. Maybe. But it's about 90 spots cover these 2 acres. And the city could remove it from the lease essentially for free. It leases to Milwaukee World Festival 75 acres. And it just would reduce that by 2 acres and then have a prorated portion of the lease reduction. So my math suggests it would cost about $50,000 a year. Doing the math backwards on some other third ward property sales, it's about 2 acres. The city can get like $2.5 million an acre in selling the land, and then it gets property tax revenue from this land. If you're looking for what could be built there, there is an MMSD easement, but you could put probably 200 in the ballpark, 200 apartments, a fairly sizable building. So then the question is, well, why hasn't the city done anything about this? One of the things is it seems like maybe they didn't really understand they even had this option because it's buried in this lease. I interviewed the mayor about it briefly yesterday. He said he indicated he didn't know about it, but then said that he was interested in exploring it further. Area Alderman Robert Bauman says he's interested in developing the site. The devil's in the details, and the lease negotiations could be an issue. And then the Department of City Development also goes, I don't think we should comment on this. We're going to have lease negotiations with Milwaukee World Festival. So this would be an interesting thing to watch if the city maintains this option in the upcoming future lease with Milwaukee World Festival.
So are you the person who found this? So no one really knew this? And it was you just digging through things and being like, huh?
I have to admit, a tipster tipped me off to look at this lease, and it was buried in there.
Milwaukee World Festival's public comment on this is
that they've never been approached by the city to develop the site.
Okay. So, I mean, yeah, I can see why the city would have interest in it. And so ultimately, you think this is going to go somewhere?
I think long term it will. The third ward land, 2009, middle of the Great Recession, not a lot of development happening. Right. Now we've got like the Italian Community Center carving up their parking lot for development. This land is just too valuable.
Yeah.
And the parking is not the most important piece of Milwaukee World Festival's focus.
Well, especially if you can build more parking.
That's what the mayor said. He's like, I think we could accommodate new parking in a new or replacement parking in a new development and development at the same time.
Give me a 30-second tease for what's coming up in the next half hour.
We've got Kinship, a major food player on the north side, developing a new building. We've got some discussion about what happens next with 794. Not everyone at the city on the same page.
What a surprise.
We've got more seats coming to the Hiawatha.
Very good.
We've got a surprise sewer blockage for MMSD. Oops. And we have a bus system planning at 25% service.
Sewer blockage? How is that a sexy story?
Well, we'll find out.
You always put the sexy ones, and you leave the sewer blockage stuff out of the teases.
I feel like there's a joke somewhere as far as like with the explosive diarrhea, sewage blockage.
Work on that.
Something. Yeah, there's something to workshop here.
All right, so we're going to have Jeremy Jean sticking around for the next half hour, as he always does. And if you have feedback or comments, you can always tee him up at 855-616-1620. A lot of great text comments today. And look, I understand people love Ortiz. You're welcome to do that. She represents a lot of people, and she probably speaks for them. Not saying that's a bad thing.
Nice suiting.
I, I think that, means, that puts you at ease. That's calming. Good job,
chill.
Jazz.
That's chill.
Even though it's smoky as hell, it's a hellscape out there, but we're going to chill anyway.
All right. Well, this is a story that we're actually going to cover even more tomorrow. Yeah. I referenced last week. I did my first volunteer shift at Kinship, and I knew this was coming. But big news on Wednesday. They broke ground and announced their new construction for a $21.5 million new building because they have very much outgrown the basement of St. Casimir right. Church as far as what the services they provide and needing more space. So tell us more about it.
Yeah, we'll talk about this just briefly then because, like you said, listen tomorrow, learn a lot more. Kinship Community Food Center, longtime River West Food Pantry, building a great new home on what was essentially vacant land next to the Holton Terrace Housing Authority development. It's on Locust and Holton, a site that perfectly bridges the River West and Harambee neighborhoods, which is both where their volunteers come from, like Kristen, and where the people that need their support come from. President and CEO Vincent Noth said, ultimately, it really isn't about a building. It's a whole building about wellness and about delivering services that maybe start with food, but end with helping someone get their GED. They run also out of Thrive on King, a cafe that helps with job skills. About a third of your time or half your time working, you get to work on life skills that help you get long-term permanent employment. So this new facility is being built. We have an article on Urban Milwaukee breaking down even more about it. And then you can tune into Point Taken tomorrow.
Yeah, Ben's going to be here to talk more about it tomorrow. He's incredible human.
What I love about this, my radio partner and pal is working on behalf of that organization. I plan on volunteering there as well. It's a great example of what you can do. And they start small. And all of a sudden, boom, look what happens. People get invested in it. Makes neighborhoods better. Makes people want to help other people. I just had this conversation earlier on the podcast. This is what you can do. And we focus so much on bad stuff. This is a great story. Yeah. And I love it. And great example.
Yeah, only good news in that story. Yeah. Shifting gears.
Yeah, how about this one?
I don't know that it's bad news, but there is a discord at City Hall. So last week we had the announcement, Mayor Cavalier Johnson saying, I'm speaking as Mayor Cavalier Johnson, I back the freeway improvement plan that I do for 794. Again, we're talking about the stretch between the Hone Bridge and the Marquette Interchange, particularly on the east side of the river near like the public market, that there's a study for a boulevard. The freeway has to be rebuilt because it's an aging concrete structure from the 1970s. And the mayor made his statement, and it kind of seemed like the debate was probably done then. That, okay, WISDOT is either going to move forward with rebuilding it as is or this freeway improvement plan.
Are you saying what does the mayor know and that's why you think that or why you're saying that?
No, I'm saying it seemed done that like this the most visible Milwaukee official had weighed in favor of one option.
Right.
And then you got a press release, not so fast, from three common council members, Alex Brower, who represents the east side and portion of River West, Robert Bauman, who represents downtown in the third ward, and Charlene Moore, who represents the west side of the city where I-94 is currently being expanded.
Boulevard backers.
They expressed their support for the boulevard. They said the mayor is only part of local government, and importantly, his position does not reflect that of the entire city. Interestingly, the city's official position uses some real good weasel words of allowing any of these options to comply with it. The downtown plan, the 2040 downtown plan, favors any improvement to the corridor over the status quo. So slimming down the main line, make the boulevard, all satisfy the downtown plan.
So at this point, does it seem like the least likely option is just rebuilding it as is?
No, I just because the price standpoint, I think you have to consider that a serious option, that it's half the cost. And at some point, the legislature is going to have to come up with a big chunk of change for this project.
As I joked, either in an email or somewhere this morning, let's just check back in 5 years when they're still arguing about it. Because that's what this seems like to me.
We're going to get in early 2027 proposal, the preferred alternative from WISDOT, from the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, and that'll really make it the high stakes. Like, this is what we want to do. They'll go get their federal approval, which will involve a public hearing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then to get to what's actually called FONSI, finding of no significant impact for environmental impact, and then you have to wait for the legislature to fund it.
As someone who used to work in PR and actually did public hearings with the DOT, part of the DOT in Wisconsin, that's pure theater. It is. Someone should make a movie about the way people act at these public hearings. It's fascinating. Just amazing. Passionate people, sure. We'll check back on 794. We'll take a break. He's Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com. He does everything there, including sell tchotchkes at the tchotchke shop. We'll wrap it up in the next 20 minutes, and then we're out of here because it's, as I said, a hellscape outside. We're just trying to survive. Maybe a face mask is in order today.
I've seen people wearing
masks. I think I still have one from the pandemic in my backpack. How about that? That's a blast from the past. Quick break.
Trains, trains, trains.
And this buses.
And buses. All right. More seats coming to the busy Hiawatha train.
If you've tried to ride the Hiawatha in the last roughly year, you might have run into a sold-out train.
Yeah. And
there's a couple different reasons for that. They stretch all the way back to the governor's race in 2010. I'll do the quick spiel on that. Wisconsin wins $810 million to extend the Hiawatha to Madison and ultimately on to Minneapolis. Part of that was Jim Doyle using the state's authority to give a no-bid contract to Talgo to build new train sets to use on the Hiawatha. You need actual train cars to run a train service. The state then defaults on that contract in 2015. It just decides, Talgo, hey, you're going to finish these trains. We're not going to pay for them. They're made in Milwaukee. They sat there for a long time. Ultimately, the state ends up paying $59 million for two trains, two passenger trains, that it never uses. One of those is now in Nigeria. The other one's still sitting at 30th and Townsend. If you want to go see it, you paid for it. Might be interesting to see someday. Flash forward then to Wisconsin needs to buy new trains because the trains it actually is relying on are aging. But because it waited so long with this Talgo ordeal, it has to get in the back of the line to buy these new Siemens trains that most of the Amtrak customers will call them. Most of the states that run Amtrak equipment are using. That order keeps getting delayed, delayed, delayed. And then the crisis happens last March where the 1980s equipment that's running on the Hiawatha has to be taken out of emergency service. Since then, with only part of this new order delivered, the states kind of with Amtrak cobbled together some different ways of managing capacity, but the Hiawatha has been notably shorter in actual length of the vehicles and number of seats since March 2025. Help is finally on the way. The train cars that the state, in partnership with the federal government, will have paid $25 million for are scheduled to arrive starting in late August. And then through October, you'll finally have the Hiawatha back up to about 400 seats per train. That actually should immediately cause the Hiawatha ridership to tick up because so many trains have been selling out. It'll also make it much easier to take a last-minute trip on the Hiawatha.
It's also one of the most efficient transit methods we have. That's why it's popular.
It's actually very financially efficient.
Yeah.
That came up in the thing you moderated last week, Kristen, where the MCTS we're going to talk about, 80 cents of every dollar needs to come from some source other than ridership. Hiawatha, 75 cents of every dollar comes from riders.
As a former local leader, here's why we get in these situations, because replacing aging infrastructure is the hardest budget sell always. I don't care if you're talking about a fire truck or something like this. No one wants to spend the money. It's good. We'll fix it. And it just lingers forever.
Which is crazy because it's something that we all rely on.
Yeah.
As far as like infrastructure seems like the most basic thing that governments should be responsible for, and understanding that like that's where funds should be going.
It's a tough sell.
And the state in 2019 did agree to buy these new trains. It's only getting them now. Yeah. So the serious manufacturing issues there. Shifting gears to a sadder story, which is that MCTS under new CEO Steve Fuentes is planning for a reduction in service. We talk a lot kind of on an annual basis about cut, cut, cut. Instead of doing that kind of cycle, Steve Fuentes is trying to get ahead of it. Let's plan a 25% service reduction. We know that that'll be sustainable for 3 years. The challenge is how do you do that? There already seems to be some pushback on the county board. MCTS has retained national consultant Jarrett Walker out of Portland. He's well known for redesigning the Houston bus system. He demands that the local agencies he work with make a key decision, which is do you focus your system on as much coverage as possible, geographic coverage, or on as getting as many riders as possible.
Do you think the county of Milwaukee and its leaders are smart enough to figure that part out?
I'll say they're smart enough. I don't think there's the political will at this point.
That's probably the more important
question. Transportation Committee demonstrated that yesterday. It's chaired by Stephen Shea from the South Suburbs. I think that's going to be a tough sell because one of the things that would happen if you focused on ridership is you'd have most of your bus lines concentrated around downtown,
right.
You'd probably see a reduction in service in places like Oak Creek.
Absolutely. And we have, since I've been there, expanded the bus service all over 13th Street, Howell Avenue, Drexeltown Square. I mean, it's amazing how that, and it wasn't just for shoppers. It was to get people to jobs in Oak Creek.
Yeah, one of the buses even says Amazon on it.
Absolutely, because that's a 2 million square foot facility that needs workers to get to work. That was an interesting thing that an interesting piece of that people don't think about. All right, last segment coming up. Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com. Quick break. We got 3 minutes to wind it up with Jeremy Janine from UrbanMilwaukee.com. And we have a lot of fun with Jeremy every Thursday in the second hour, but it is a great local resource for all things city and county. Great news, and they cover everything. Great reporting. All right, take us home.
We have a literally S-word situation here. And there's a lot of questions about the timing involved in this. So we knew about the 1,000-year storm last August. Then in April, there was another pretty dramatic storm with a lot of rainfall.
Not 1,000-year?
Not 1,000-year, thankfully. And in both cases, there was the 1,000-year storm last August had flooding all across the region. Last April, there was a lot of flooding still in Bayview, and there wasn't as much flooding all across the rest of the region. That leads to an April 29th meeting where Alderwoman Marina Dmitrievich, who represents the area, is asking Department of Public Works, city officials, which own the sewer pipes that connect to the MMSD pipes, and the MMSD officials, like, what can be done here? This keeps happening. As an example, the Mothership Bar on Logan near Bay Street flooded twice.
Wow.
Massive, I think six figures in damage both times. Now, historically, if you look, there's Deer Creek and just geography, topology, everything drains downhill that way. It's a tough situation. But then what came out, and actually credit is due to Caitlin Luby at the Journal Sentinel, was the first to have this. There was a clogged overflow pipe in the port, which is when the deep tunnel fills up to prevent the sewage from going back into your, coming out of your toilet, basically.
Yeah.
They've closed these gates and directed into these overflow pipes. That's what initiates the sewer overflows. Well, those pipes need to be open. And the one closest to Bayview was completely clogged, unbeknownst to anyone.
You can't just call a local plumber to fix that.
No, they actually had to dig in the porch, rip open the top of the pipe to discover how clogged it was. Because of changing lake levels, they think, because this thing is submerged in the lake, should be, and then it wasn't. Changing lake levels might have caused water and debris in it, like tree branches and stuff, to flow backwards, and then that all accumulated in this overflow pipe. You wouldn't notice it normally because, one, those overflow pipes are only used like once or twice a year.
Yeah.
And there's so much water going everywhere then. So there still might have been flooding in Bayview, and MMSD is investigating this. But there's now a big question of, well, is Marina Dmitrievich is asking for restitution? Like,
for the homeowners?
For the homeowners.
And business owners? Yeah.
Yeah. And then the question, well, if my house floods on the northwest side, it wasn't caused by this.
How open are they to that idea?
They say they just want to investigate to understand if this overflow pipe actually caused any of that, but it sure seems like a serious issue.
All right. Not a 1,000-year storm, but a you-know-what storm.
Well done.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com. You know what's next. It's the news on 640 WDMJ.